Psalm chapter 46. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. We're going to see some of those other verses. But I just remind you of something you already know this morning. The election that we have endured or enjoyed, depending upon your position, is over. All the buttons that can be pushed have been pushed. The votes have been counted. The Electoral College is yet to come, but we know pretty much what that's going to do. The results are in, and the people have spoken. And so the will of the people has been expressed in this great democracy of ours in terms of our supreme commander, our ultimate leadership here in this country. Some that have stayed up late and early to check those results on election night and the morning after election were very pleased with the outcome. Others were not so pleased, were very saddened. The next morning, if you tuned in to any of the news channels and watched the pundits that sit around the tables and discuss all the implications of what we the people decided to do, there were tended to be a lot of long faces around the table, because the conviction on the in the heart of many of those people is that the people made a mistake. And people don't make too many mistakes. This is the express will and desire of the people. But some have reacted to that by being angry, by marching in the streets, by breaking glass and trashing automobiles, doing the only thing that those kinds of folks seem to know what to do when they don't get what they want. We have a segment of our society that tends toward those kinds of things. Some are afraid. They're genuinely afraid for what is might be coming for our country because of the decision that the people have made. I just remind us all this morning, whether your candidate won or did not win, that doesn't change anything in heaven. Not a single thing. And what we have been discussing for months on ends down here in America as we have prepared for this process and have worked our way through this process, believe you me, the angels in heaven have not been discussing that. They did not tune in to the debates to see exactly what was going on there and who said what, the latest thing that might be breaking, and not a single ripple in heaven. Whoever is elected in this country, or whoever usurps authority in some other country, God can use. And God will use ultimately. Bruce has been leading us through the study of Jeremiah on Wednesday evening, and we've been seeing that very clearly, that both good and bad, God has never been hesitant about His wisdom, about His ability to take good people and to take bad people, and to use those people to accomplish His purposes for His children. And He'll continue to do that. This is out of Psalm chapter 46. God is our refuge and strength. He is a very present help in truth and trouble. Based upon that reality, David says, therefore will not we fear. We will not be afraid. Though, here's some things that could happen, he admits. Though the earth be removed and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, though the waters thereof roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with the swellings thereof. You know, if the situation gets to that point, and I don't anticipate that it's going to get to that point, even in something like that, we need not be afraid. God has always been able to speak in the midst of chaos. I mean, when He created what He created in this world, the world, the earth, and all this was without form and void and darkness. And out of all of that, God created something wonderful and beautiful, and He's always been able to work, even in the midst of the chaotic scene that David describes in verses 2 and 3. And he reminds us that there is a river. Now, verse 4. The streams whereof shall make glad the city of God, the holy place of the tabernacles of the Most High. And concerning that river and the city of God, God is in the midst of her. Right there in the midst of her. And she shall not be moved. God shall help her. And that right early. He'll never be late. He'll always be on time, and giving us the exact kind of help we need at exactly the time that we most need it. That's our God. He has always done that. And He shall continue. Though the heathen rage, verse 6, The kingdoms were moved. He uttered his voice and the earth melted. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. Come, behold the works of the Lord, what desolations he hath made in the earth. He maketh wars to cease unto the end of the earth. He breaketh the bow and cutteth the spear in sunder. He burneth the chariot in the fire. Be still, he says. And know that I am God. So in those situations that we face, those crises that come our way, whether real or imagined, this is not half bad advice for God's people. We're just folks like everybody else. We live in a very real world. We get caught up in the circumstances that govern, that change our world. And some of those circumstances concern us. Always know, in whatever circumstance you find yourself, politically or personally, whatever the chaos that seems to be erupting within your family, be still in the midst of that chaos long enough to remember that He is still God. This is in Psalm chapter 77. I'm thumbing over a few pages in my Bible if you want to thumb over a few in yours. I cried unto God with my voice, verse 1. This is the Psalm of Asaph, not of David. And He gave ear unto me. In the day of my trouble I sought the Lord. My soul ran in the night and ceased not. My soul refused to be comforted. I remembered God and was troubled. I complained and my spirit was overwhelmed. Thou holdest mine eyes awake and can't get any sleep. I am so troubled that I cannot speak. I have considered the days of old, the years of ancient times. Asaph said, then, you know, his time is old to us. But he said, I've been thinking a lot about the way things were back a long, long time ago. And he said this. He says some things that he calls to remembrance. Three things to do. I call to remembrance my song in the night. Do you have one? What is it that in your world, that when things seem to be chaotic and there seems to be peril everywhere that you go, things aren't working out the way you anticipated, do you have a song you can remember? Do you have a passage that you keep coming back to in Scripture that you recite to yourself to remind you of what you need to be reminded of? Asaph asks a series of questions beginning in verse 7. I think he asks six questions. Will the Lord cast me off forever? Is that the way God is? I mean, is He through dealing with me? Is it all over? Will He be favorable no more? Will I never find grace in His sight again? Is His mercy clean, gone forever? Maybe it can seem that way. Does His promise fail forevermore? Hath God forgotten to be gracious? Hath He in anger shut up His tender mercies? Six good questions. And the answer to every one of those questions, as you very well know, is no. Absolutely not. And I said, verse 10. Here's what he said. He said, this is my problem. As he's thinking about these things, as he remembers his song, as he's living in the midst of this chaos, as he's asking himself these questions, he said, this the King James language is, this is my infirmity. I'm in the shape that I am in because of me, because of the way I'm viewing this, because what I'm failing to see and understand. And so he says, I will remember. Three things he says he's determined to remember. Well, four, counting the one in verse 6 and remembering the song. He said, I will remember the years of the right hand of the Most High. Has God ever taken care of you in the past? Has there ever been a time when God has actually answered your prayer? And when you have felt very confident in your relationship with Him? I will remember the years of the right hand of the Most High. I will remember, he says in verse 11, the works of the Lord. And when you look at all that God has done over all the centuries of time, you look at all the problems that have existed in this world among all the nations and peoples of this world, and yet here we still are. Maybe the chaos that I am feeling, that is swirling about in my soul, maybe it's not something more than He can handle. I will remember the wonders of old. All those old stories that your mom and daddy told you at bedtime, or that your grandparents shared with you, or that you heard here in church in Bible class. I'll remember those wonders. I will meditate also of all thy work and talk of all thy doing. So he's going to do some meditation, thinking about this. I'm going to give it a little time. He says this in a wonderful statement. He says, thy way, O God, is in the sanctuary. In coming to that realization, he asks this question. Who is so great a God as our God? And I'm saying that to say this to you. You know, you're in the right place this morning. Every time you come to this place, whether it's tonight or next Wednesday evening or the following Sunday, every time you come together and gather here with God's people, you've come to the right place. We talk about God's way here. What it means to live in the grace of God and to share in His mercy and in His goodness. And as we talk about those things with one another, we are all reminded that, boy, out of all the gods that this world has created from the time that we first began creating gods, there is no god that we have created that begins to match the greatness of our God. He is who He is. God remains in control. Mama used to sing a song. I think I've told you this before. She used to sing lots of songs, but one of the songs that she would sing, not in church, but we'd sing, she would sing around the house. She'd sit down at the old upright piano we had down in our farmhouse at Washburn growing up, and she would pound away on the keys and sing, He's Got the Whole World in His Hands. She liked that song. She liked several songs, but that's one she would always sit down and play and sing. But the question we raise about that song is, does He? Does God really have the whole world in His hands? You know, it's a reasonable question to ask. There's a lot of stuff that goes on in this world that we don't understand. The why of that and the purpose behind that, and is God really in control, and or is He not? Let me remind you of what John said in 1 John 5:19 when he said, we know that we are of God. And John was reminding the children of Israel, or children of God, that in the midst of the persecution they were enduring, and they were enduring some, said, we can know this. We don't know why everything's going on, and we don't know how it's all going to turn out here for us individually, but we know this. We know that we're of God. And we know this second thing. He said, we know that the whole world lies in wickedness. Well, if God's got the whole world in His hands, what about that part? No. Why doesn't He do something with that part of this world as tragedy hits, and it does frequently, whether it's a terrorist strike or whether it's just stuff that happens here in our community that we get so tired of hearing about those kinds of things, and some awfulness occurs that reminds us that wickedness and evil, we don't have to look halfway around the world to the Middle East to find that kind of stuff. It's just here. The young man that ran over the young woman not very far from here while she was holding the little boy in her arms. She was supposed to be a girlfriend of some kind. I always wonder how that happens, where you go in a relationship from he's the greatest thing in the world and she's the greatest thing in the world to I believe I'll just kill you. How does that work? How does that move to that direction, you know? Yeah, the older guy who was paraded across your TV screen and mine, charged locally here, he and his wife, with the death of the little six-year-old boy. And we've got a little six-year-old grandson. And I saw the pictures of that little old boy, you know. What kind of person is it that would do the abuse of that little boy that big old burly, scary-looking guy did? And if there was any sign of remorse, it wasn't visible to anything that we saw on TV. He just did what he did because he wanted to do it and because he had the power to do so. Evil and wickedness are found everywhere in this world. We have been practicing wrong kinds of things as people for so long that we have gotten really skilled doing bad kinds of stuff. It gets so bad from time to time that the only way of addressing the wickedness and the evil is destroying it. Destruction. Now, whether that be on a personal basis for the guy like this that did that to that little boy, this world needs to be rid of him. For all of those that commit that kind of murder and that kind of atrocity, sometimes evil gets so evil it just needs to be destroyed. When God looked at this world in Genesis chapter 6, and you know, that's not that far removed from Eden, but when he looked at the people in the world that existed at that time, he saw that the thoughts of their heart, what do you think about when you think about stuff? You think about all kinds of good stuff. Now, there's something wrong might wiggle in there from time to time, and you have to discipline yourself and try to get that out. But you think about good stuff. These people, the thoughts of their heart were only evil continually. And the only way that could be dealt with is through destruction. What do we do with ISIS? It's only evil continually. There's no way to deal with all the stuff that goes on over there other than to destroy it. Sometimes evil gets so evil that even God has no choice. Sodom and Gomorrah were destroyed because of that. Babylon was destroyed because of that. Egypt was destroyed. Syria was destroyed. What about in America? I don't know in America. I don't know. Will the wickedness and the evil here get so bad that God looks at our nation that was once, pretty well blessed of God and say, there's no hope. There's not enough good left in all the bad to preserve it. Sodom and Gomorrah could have been spared if they had been 10 righteous souls, as Abraham bargained for those cities. And there were not 10 righteous souls in all that land. It's weary, yet wearisome. Well, is God in charge of all of that? Where is God in that? Well, we live in two worlds. You understand that, don't you? I mean, and we live in a world that God created. In the midst of that world, as you look back in Genesis 1, 2, and 3 at this creation of God and what God made as an abode for humanity, absolutely idyllic. Nirvana. As close to heaven on earth as you would ever find existed here when God created this world. All beauty and glory. All performing its function according to the way that God planned it, but then we messed it up. And sin entered the world. So that the world that we live in today is not the world that Adam and Eve were created to enjoy. It is different. Markedly so. Death entered this world. When sin entered this world, and everything changed. So if you want to know what world God holds in His hand and what it is that God loves in this world, when God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son, don't look at the wickedness. Don't look at the fruit that is borne by all the evil things that we have thought and all the evil things that we have done. That's us. That's on us. That's not on God. When God gave us the ability to choose what kind of people we wanted to be, and we made the wrong choice somewhere along the course of the line in Eden, everything after that is on us. It is not on God. Now, God works through the wickedness. God can work all things to the good for those that love the Lord, Romans 8:28, and those that are the called according to His purpose. He can take the good and the bad and the ugly so that the ultimate outcome of that for those that love Him, for those that serve Him, is ultimately good. But none of the rest of it is. It's just what we've made of it. Love not the world. John said in 1 John 2:15. So what can we do about all of this? Here's what you can do, the Lord said. Don't love that world. I love the world of nature. Well, love that world, that's fine, but don't love that other world. For all that is in that other world, John says, and here's all that's in that other world, it's not the trees and the streams and the mountains.
It's the lust of the flesh, it's the lust of the eyes, and it's the pride of life. All of that that is in that other world is not of God. So what can we do about this stuff? We can refuse to love it. We can refuse to walk after the flesh, to live for the lusts, to fill our hearts with pride. We can refuse to do that. Are you bothered by all the... Of course you are. All of the wickedness and the injustices that we see rampant within the world today, of course you are. Do you find it frustrating? Do you find sometimes that you're angry because of all of that? Sure you do. But when you're experiencing those kinds of feelings, know that you've just taken one small step in the shoes of God. Just for one small time, and then maybe this one small instance, you've been privileged to walk in His shoes. Our wickedness, our sin, has been a source of frustration and anger for God from the time that the first sin entered this world. He is angry with sinners all the day long. Because why would we choose that over Him? What sense does that make to anybody that we would do that? Doesn't make much sense. Well, what should we do? Let me just offer you a few quick things. Don't confuse God with life. I know it's hard not to, but don't confuse God with life. Life is not fair. In the world, Jesus said, John 16:33, it is not fair. You will have tribulation, but I don't deserve the trouble. Well, no, you don't, but you got it anyway. So now what are you going to do? Don't confuse God with life. And think that because the world isn't fair, then obviously God is not fair. And how can you ever possibly serve or love God in all the unfairness that He has brought into this world? Number two, God's closeness. Understand this. Is not tied to your circumstances. Whatever those circumstances might be, they do not affect His closeness to you. It's not that when life isn't going as you would anticipate it, it's because God has walked away. He's busy taking care of someone else and He's forgotten that I'm still over here. It's not any of that. And when you're enjoying the blessing, it's not because God is closer. If you are a Christian, God is with you always because God is in you. Christ is in you. It's Christ in you, the hope of glory, Paul says. So understand, since that is true, number three, that when we are hurt by things, that God hurts also. Don't ever think that what goes on with us as His children does not bother God. That He has no feeling about it one way or the other. That He's somehow remote and distant from the things that bother us. Let me tell you this about your children that you already know. When you are the closest to them is not when little Susie's in her bedroom reading a book and you're in the living room watching the latest football game on TV. And somebody asks, well, where's Susie? Well, she's in her room reading a book. But all of a sudden you hear Susie in the room yell real loud, and you know, for Daddy and Mama. Daddy and Mama are sitting there occupied with other stuff, and Mama says to Daddy, you go take care of her. And Daddy says to Mama, well, I'm trying to finish this book. And both sprint up out of their seats and they go as quickly as they can down the hall to Susie's bedroom, because what hurts her hurts them. And what hurts her hurts... You can speak to this as a parent. What hurts her hurts them worse than it hurts her. We are God's children. It does not yet appear what we shall be, but right now, John said, we know this. We are His children. He is never closer to us than the time in which we are experiencing hurt or difficulty. Don't think that the hurt or difficulty is somehow or another forcing Him away somewhere. Where was God when Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were thrown in the fire just outside of Babylon? If you go looking for God, where was this God that they served? Were willing to go into the fiery furnace for? Well, He was in the furnace with them. If you go looking for God, that's where He was. When Joseph's brothers betrayed him and threw him in that pit, where was God? God was in the pit with Joseph. When Joseph got down to Egypt into Potiphar's house, God moved in with Joseph. When Joseph moved into that house, when Joseph was in the dungeon, God moved in with Joseph. In the dungeon, where was God when Job was sitting on that ash heap all day scratching his sores? God was sitting on the ash heap with Job, knowing exactly what was going on with Job. God was with David when David walked through the valley of the shadow of death. God was with Paul when Paul was at his lowest point in the dungeons of Rome awaiting his execution. Don't think that God is not aware, and don't think that God is not touched. Hebrews 4 clearly tells us He can be touched with the feelings of our infirmities. Spend time with God. Number 4, spend time with Him. More time than you spend with CNN, or more time than you spend with Fox or with MSNBC, or spend time with God. How in the world can we ever come to know Him if we don't spend that kind of time with God that God would have us spend with Him? So in prayer, in consideration of His Word, number 5, follow Jesus' example. And whatever you do, whatever you experience, you remember in Jesus' ministry, I read the Gospels constantly, as you do as well. But in all the reading of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, to try and follow along in the steps of Jesus through His ministry, I never found an instance where Jesus came upon anybody, whether it was blind people or deaf people or people that couldn't walk or people that were near death or whoever it was that was struggling and suffering. Jesus never said to anybody, "Well, bless your heart. It's a shame that this has happened to you. How in the world could you have to experience something so terrible and tragic?" Jesus never had that conversation with anybody in this world. Well, what did He do? He just ministered to them. Because Jesus knew the world in which these people were living was not fair. You don't get what you deserve in this world, good or bad. We're waiting for that for the next world. So what do you do with all those kinds of things? You just minister to it. So in your family, when chaos is swirling, just try and help be a servant in that. How can we make it more bearable? How can we help improve it? Follow the example of Jesus. Spend less time asking why. Spend more time asking what now. And don't ever forget the cross. The greatest injustice that the world has ever seen was the injustice that was seen at Calvary. So be looking ever unto Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before Him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is now set down at the right hand of the throne of God. Let's close with this section of Scripture. This is out of Psalm 5. This is from David. "Give ear to my words, O Lord. Consider my meditation. Hearken unto the voice of my cry, my King and my God, for unto Thee will I pray. My voice shalt Thou hear in the morning, O Lord. In the morning will I direct my prayer unto Thee and will look up. For Thou art not a God that hath pleasure in wickedness. Neither shall evil dwell with Thee. The foolish shall not stand in Thy sight. Thou hatest all workers of iniquity. Thou shalt destroy them that speak lies. The Lord will abhor the bloody and deceitful man." David had this confidence about God. God can set things straight. Whatever is not right in this crooked world will ultimately be set straight. But as for me, this was all about what God, he knew God would do. But he said, what do I do about it now? As for me, here's what I'll do. "I will come into thine house in the multitude of thy mercy to bicker and complain about all the unfairness of life that God has allowed to come my way." I added that part. That's not why David came into God's house in the multitude of His mercy. "In thy fear will I worship toward thy holy temple." You see, that was the decision that David made. In the face of it, he was having to endure some stuff. I mean, getting chased around those hills for his life when he was trying to be a good guy, living in a cave. But in the face of all that David was enduring and the betrayal that had been conducted against him, his decision was, "Well, I know for sure where God is. I'll go where I know He is. I'll inquire there about His mercy and about His goodness. I will pray. I will serve. And I will come to understand. So you come to the right place today. Just keep on coming. We're going to sing a song of invitation. If you're here and not a Christian, this is your opportunity to come in obedience to the gospel. Repentance of sin and confession of your faith will baptize you this morning into Christ. Or if you need our prayers as God's child, we stand ready to assist. You come while we stand and sing.